This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm going to get to, I don't want to make Isaiah wait through Steve and I's riveting conversation. So I'm going to go to Isaiah right now. Isaiah, what you got, man?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Irv, thanks for taking my phone call. I appreciate it. I just want to give you my favorite Oracle memory. So my favorite Oracle memory was last year when I was working with for the Warriors as an usher, and I think this was during the Western Conference Finals. It was after the game. You know how ESPN and like other media, national media, they're giving their interviews on the court. So I'm walking down onto the court to give, I mean, to get to the break room to change, and then as I'm walking on the court, I passed by Stephen A. Smith, who was giving his interview, and then I walked by him, and then I stop, I turn around, I look at him for a bit, and I find myself staring right at the camera, and then I didn't know he was on live TV, so I keep going back, and then after I go home, what happens is I go on YouTube and I find a clip of Stephen A. Smith giving his interview about Klay Thompson's performance, and then I find myself in the background of Stephen A. Smith's interview. Like, I video bombed Stephen A. Smith live on TV. That's my favorite Oracle memory.
Did you look sweet, though, Isaiah?
I mean, I didn't look sweet. Like, I just, like, I was just staring at the camera. That's kind of all I was doing. Like, I just stood, I just stared, and then I just walked away.
So you're a mouth-breathing moron on television, basically.
Yeah.
I love that you admit to it. Thank you for the phone call, Isaiah. I appreciate that. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 KGMZ, San Francisco. It is a radio.com. Sports station. I'm that guy who's afraid of technology. Don't be afraid of the radio.com app. It's really easy. You push two buttons and you're good to go. And then you get to hear Guru on Blue Chew. Hello, Tommy Call. We've got luminaries coming in. It's the final regular season game at Oracle, and Tommy Call has graced us with his presence. I like it. Tommy, it's Nash. Oh, my gosh. Was Tommy back there? Oh, okay. Jeez, I thought I was going crazy. Not to say that I'm not. This man will decide for us. Steve Kroner, he's been working in the Bay Area sports media for a long time. There's not a whole lot that's popped off here that Steve probably hasn't covered or edited the story written by somebody who covered it. He's with the Chronicle, Sporting Green. One thing I do every Saturday, every Sunday, I put quarters in a box and they give you a newspaper. Kids, check it out. Steve, how are you today, man? Happy Sunday.
Michael, I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm terrific. Would you like to share your favorite moment or two from Oracle as we celebrate the final regular season game for the Warriors there?
You know, I'm going to expose my age here a little bit. As a teenage Warrior fan in the 70s, in 1973, I believe, I was there for Game 6. When the Warriors pulled a big upset and beat the Milwaukee Bucks in the Western Conference, I think, semifinals. So that was pretty cool as a kid. And then the next
year,
a game that kept the Warriors out of the playoffs, but one of the great individual performances I've ever seen. Downtown Freddie Brown of the Sonics scored like 58 against the Warriors, and that game actually kept the Warriors out of the playoffs. So I'm showing my age, but
no three-pointers back then, were there, Steve?
No, indeed. And downtown Freddie Brown could hit a few three-pointers if there had been an arc back in that
day. Yeah, how many bitter old men are out there retired from the NBA saying, I would have averaged 8 more points a game. That would have been another $2 million a year if they had a three-point line when I played.
I would say minimum 50, maybe 100. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I looked up, I don't know why I was doing it, but Larry Bird, I looked to see how many threes the most he ever took in a season. I think it's because I had read something about Steph had just broken his own record.
Right.
Like, even in his most prolific shooting the three, he'd shoot like 4 or 5 a game. That's it.
It's amazing. You know, I'm one who is not in favor of the way that the three has taken over the game. Mm-hmm. I might be a bitter old man, but I think it's really taken an outsized import. But to expound on that a little bit, I did a little research myself. The 1984 NBA Finals, which is one of the classic NBA Finals of all time, Lakers and Celtics, you had Kareem and Magic for the Lakers, you had Bird and Parrish and McHale for the Celtics. In that entire seven-game series, I believe the Celtics took 24 three-point attempts and the Lakers took something like 18. And the Celtics had Larry Bird, who's not, you know, if he's not the greatest shooter of all time, he's certainly in the top 10.
Top five.
The three-point shot has taken on a much greater import, much more outsized import than I think it was intended to be. And yes, you can get off my lawn now, please.
So do I hear a little bit of Mark Jackson coming from you? Did Steph ruin basketball?
I would not say that Steph ruined basketball, but I will say that the three-point arc has changed basketball. Steph didn't ruin it. I mean, the Warriors have taken advantage of the three-point arc as well as anybody, and throw the Rockets in there too. And the Rockets take it. I mean, to me, the Rockets play a really ugly brand of basketball. But if you're going to have the mantra of three-pointers or layups, they're taking it to its logical extreme.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, again, getting off the subject a little bit, but or staying on it, however you want to look at it, I really think in college basketball, they've got to move the arc back. It's like 20 feet 9 inches. They ought to move it back to at least the international, which I believe is like 22-2. Because, again, college basketball, even more so, that the arc has taken on an outsized importance.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's why it's taken a guy, a fantastic shooter like Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks. It took him, I mean, the entire summer league, he was miserable. Obviously, I mean, that it's, you think about it, okay, well, it's only a couple of feet, and it's, even where the change is the least significant, it's still a couple, 3 feet, and Trae Young clearly had established himself as a premier three-point shooter, but it was with the college line. And there were his first couple of games in the Vegas Summer League, he was airballing threes. I felt bad for the guy. I mean, he's figured it out, obviously, but yeah, it's a big deal. And I think they should. I'm with you, Steve. I don't think you go all the way to NBA in college, but the international seems like a good compromise.
That's what I would go for if I were the head of the NCAA basketball committee. But I'm not.
And you'd have to live in Indianapolis, so I think you're fine just where you are, Steve.
I sure hope so.
Steve Croner works for the San Francisco Chronicle. He is a terrific writer. He is an editor over there. You can follow him on Twitter, at Steve Croner, K-R-O-N-E-R-S-F. Did I get that right?
You did indeed.
You got it right. All right, you're here to talk.
I originally wanted to be just Steve Croner, but apparently that was already taken. I believe it was taken by a professor at Ohio State, believe it or not.
So you wanted just at Steve Croner?
Yep, and it was already taken.
Okay. All right. You think they were squatting? They were squatting on you, I think. They were going to try to get money out of you, see how badly you wanted it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. There you go.
All right. Let's talk a little bit of baseball because I know, I mean, the only time I see you when I'm working, mostly because I'm primarily, have been, a baseball guy, that's where I see you, at the baseball parks. Now, don't get confused here, Steve. Oracle Park is in San Francisco now, and so are the Warriors. You got it?
Let me see if I can get that through my small brain. The Warriors, whom I am old enough to say that I did see play in San Francisco, are coming back to San Francisco, and Oracle Park is now what used to be Pac Bell Park, what used to be SBC Park, what used to be AT&T Park. Okay, I got it.
Boom, you got it. Okay, so baseball at Oracle Park this year, I think we all agree it's not going to feature nail biters in September with the division lead on the line. Is that safe to say?
I think it's fairly safe to say, but I wouldn't rule it out completely.
Oh, look at you, Steve.
I would not rule it out completely. It's a long shot, but I mean, if you're a best case scenario individual, I mean, and then a lot of things would have to go right. But I think you can say in optimistic, realistic terms, that the Giants' pitching ought to be pretty good. Not great, but certainly better than average.
Right.
And their infield, including their catcher, would be at least major league average and very, you know, very much better than average defensively and perhaps offensively. The biggest question is what can they get out of the outfield? And it's hard to say right now, even a realistic optimist.
Hey, they've got outfielders I've heard of now, at least. That's a change from the first week.
And the outfield defense ought to be pretty darn good. What I mean to say is what offensively can they get out of Kevin Pillar, Gerardo Parra, and Steven Duggar? You know, their defense outfield is pretty solid. But you can't say that you're going to get a whole lot of offense out of that outfield. Maybe I'm wrong, but not only offense but power. They are power deficient even in an optimistic scenario. But stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
If you've got good pitching and you've got good defense, you can win some games.
And Steve, let's be honest. The 2010, 2012, and 2014 Giants, they did not go into the season with people like us predicting that they would win the World Series. Far from it.
Certainly not the 2010 team.
Yep.
The 2012 team, I think, had some people believing in it, and maybe even the 2014 team. But by no means did anybody think the 2010 team was going to win the World Series, and it did. Now, I'm not going on the air and saying the Giants are going to win the World Series this year. I will say, I think some of the doom and gloom is a little bit, if not completely wrong, at least premature.
Mm-hmm. So what are you anticipating from the Giants today? I think the over-under on victories was, Spadoni, help me out, was it 83?
I thought it was less than that. I wasn't, it was like 73.
Yeah, that's right. It was sub-500. What do you think? I say 500 year would be a fantastic year for the Giants, as long as while putting up with, I mean, that's a lot of losses still. But if you've identified with certainty guys who either are part of your solution going forward, or just as important, you figured out he's not part of the solution going forward. If you've identified, I don't know, 8 to 10 of those types of people, and you get yourself to respectability, which is kind of what the 500 mark stands for, I think that would be a solid year one for Farhan.
I completely agree with you. And I think people forget, too, I mean, as bad as last season was for the Giants, it really wasn't last season that was bad. It was last September. At the end of August, they were about a 500 team. In the middle of August, they were like 4.5 games out of first place and 4.5 games out of the wild card, something like that. They were certainly not a great team last season, but they were competitive. They were a decent team for 5 months, and they were horrible in September.
But it still felt like they were 40 back the whole year, didn't it?
I mean, people say that, but I don't necessarily go by feelings. I go by what I see on the paper, and the paper says they're 4 games out or they're 5 games out. You know, it would have taken a lot of things to break their way, but, you know, they weren't a terrible team for 5 months. They were an average team. They were probably a little better than average pitching team and a worse than average hitting team, and that certainly came back to haunt them. But part of that, too, was they didn't have Posey for the last month of the season. And their pitching, which had been good for the most part for 5 months, kind of went south as well. But in any event, if you look at 70, I think they had 73 wins last season, which is certainly not anything about which you want to boast. But people forget that's 9 more wins than they had the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
So in some sense, they had made some progress. They had 9 more wins than they had the previous season, and they went 5-21 in September.
Yeesh.
So there was a little bit of progress. You know, again, it's not a season on which you want to hang your hat, but I think people sometimes forget, you know, where you are in the moment. In the moment in the middle of August, there was still a chance that the Giants could be playing in October. By the middle of September, that chance certainly was long gone. But
hey, but you added glass half full, and that's what I appreciate about you, Steve. Steve Kroner, he writes for the San Francisco Chronicle. He edits for the San Francisco Chronicle. He joins us to talk a little bit of baseball on a Sunday. Steve, I've got like a minute left max. I want to ask you a two-part question. You are David Forst, and you get to cherry pick one guy off the Giants roster, and then you get to go be Farhan Zaidi, and you get to cherry pick 1A off their roster. What is your moves?
Wow. That's a great question. If I'm David Forrest, I think the one guy I take is Buster Posey.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they could carry a light hitting catcher. I guess they've got enough pop elsewhere.
Wow. I think I'd take Buster Posey. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
If I'm Farhan and I want to get somebody from the A's, boy, that's, if you take contract into consideration, or you don't take contract into consideration, I take Matt Chapman. If you do take contract into consideration, and so you have Evan Longoria there, and you might not, even though Matt Chapman in the long term is certainly probably the better choice, and you don't have that choice because you've got Longoria long term, then who's your best A's outfielder? I'd probably go right now. I guess I'd go with Stephen Piscotty.
Yeah, I don't know. Laureano?
Laureano's had a great 58 games. I'm still a little bit skeptical for a guy who was not able to get on the 40-man roster for the Astros. I mean, if they were able basically to not give him to the A's, but almost give him to the A's.
I have a new rule, by the way. It's okay. Don't run on Laureano.
That's a good rule.
It is a good rule.
Four runs in the ninth inning.
I know. Hey, Steve, we got to bounce, man. You've been so good, I lost track of time. My bad. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
All right, Steve Kroner of the San Francisco Chronicle. We are still sharing our favorite moments from Oracle, Roracle. I think somebody somewhere says they have the answer to my question about when Oracle became Roracle. You want to know that, right? You're going to go to the game tonight? You want to be able to tell people that. You want to sound smart? I want you to find Guru and tell him what I'm going to tell you on the other side. I'm Mike Lurbin. This is 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us. I am Mike Lurbin, 121 on a beautiful Sunday. The last regular season game ever for the Warriors at Roracle tonight. Or will they play again in the regular season at Oracle? If Joe Lacob knows what he's doing, you following me, Joe? Give me a call. We'll talk about it. Donate all the proceeds to the Oakland Athletic League, a music program, something. Remain a hero in Oakland. Do a couple of games a year at Roracle. I'm sure the denizens, the deep pocket denizens of the Chase Center, the experience, they'll be all right with it. Our first guest of the day, second guest, sorry, actually, Jason Cole. He is synonymous with the National Football League, editor-in-chief of FanSided, formerly Yahoo Sports Bleacher Report, 35 years in the business. Follow him on Twitter at JasonCole62. Jason, what's going on, man? Thank you for your time.
Oh, life is beautiful. Is Oracle going to be up that much longer? Or is the city of Oakland going to demolish it?
Oh, they're going to still do concerts and all sorts of stuff there. There'll be tractor pulls to your heart's delight.
I got the feeling that Libby Schaff is going to do her best to sell that property.
Yeah, I'm sure. I just found it interesting that when at the same time about that the Warriors are leaving Oracle, Oracle's coming over to the other side of the bay as the baseball stadium now. So you lose the Warriors, you lose Oracle. It's a package deal, apparently.
Yes, I think that will. I mean, look, Oracle's got some. Larry Ellison's got money that he can put just about anywhere he wants.
So. True. Hey, Jason, do you have any? We've been asking the audience because it is their last regular season game in Oakland for the Warriors. Any favorite memories of that stadium? Have you spent much time there?
Oh yeah, I covered all sorts of events. I covered the Warriors in the Run TMC days.
Oh, nice.
But I think the event that I remember the best, there'd be a couple. Obviously, the Run TMC days were fun. So there were a lot of really cool games. It's just they were not, unfortunately, because they never had a big man. they were never able to take advantage of having Tim and Mitch and Chris together, right? So I think
Manute Bol didn't do it for you?
I'm sorry, what?
Manute Bol didn't do it for you?
Manute was kind of cool. I kind of like Terry Teagle a little bit better from that. With that,
that's a good name. Nice.
There we go. I would say my three favorite games that I watched there is the state championships with Jason Kidd, his junior and senior year. I went and saw those games.
Nice.
When he was at, was it St. Joe's?
Yep.
Of Alameda.
Yep.
And guy, he was the man playing with boys.
Did they win both of those games?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah, you know, when I was in junior college when Jay Kidd was in high school, I grew up in the Bay Area. I was told that there was, like, the best pickup ball in the Bay Area was at the now-closed Alameda Naval Base. And so me and some of my teammates from my JC team went out there, and we ended up playing in a 5-on-5. The other team had Jason Kidd, Chris Mullen, Greg Foster, and who was the guy? He didn't Hook Mitchell. Those four guys, luminaries. We got our asses kicked, Jason.
Right? Yeah. Well, you weren't going to win a whole lot of games because Chris would do all the shooting, and then and Kid, that way Kid didn't have to shoot his jump shot.
Yeah, you know what? I scored one time, and Mullen said, "Hey, nice left." I'm left-handed. I didn't tell him that, though. So, Jason, you covered the Run TMC years. I did not know that about your history. That's awesome. That must be a lot of great memories.
Run TMC. And then my favorite game to cover there, because I was a spectator for Jason Kidd, was who was the shooter? He was a kid who played at UCLA and then played in the NBA. What was his name? The great three-point shooter kid. He was about 6'8".
From where?
Tracy Murray.
Oh, yeah, UCLA, yeah.
Yeah, Tracy Murray from SoCal. He came up and they played in the Division III state championships against Menlo Atherton. And I was covering MA back at the time among all the high schools I covered.
Ben Parks?
Yeah, Ben Parks. That was football. But Jeff Kleinow was the basketball coach. And MA won the game. But it was not Tracy McGrady. It's Tracy Murray. Tracy Murray scored 63. I think he set the arena record or tied it with 63 points in a 32-minute high school game.
Yeah, wow.
Whatever it was. He was ridiculous. He was the best. Yeah, it was like watching Larry Bird shoot threes. He was that hot.
It's like the Sleepy Floyd of Superman.
He was playing for like Fontana, and they had nobody else with him. So it was like him and four mediocre white kids.
Now, was Lamon Murray from Cal? Weren't they cousins or something?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Okay, got it.
So, yeah, but Tracy Murray put on a complete and total spectacle. And I just remember the kids from MA were, like, really jacked up. It was like Cedric Reed and Kendrick Reed and all those kids. And they won the state title, so they're all jacked up. But they came out, and they go, "We heard he was good. We didn't hear he was that good."
Right.
It was awesome. So those would be my favorite memories of what is now Oakland Arena. Aside from the fun memory of one of the reporters who covered the Warriors pointing out to Don Nelson that the rim was loose at one end, and Nelly was like, "That's not true. It's not true. It's not true." And then they were like, "Absolutely, it's true. The shooting percentage is much higher at one end because the rim was loose." And so Nelson comes out and shoots at the rim, and it like clanks, and it's so soft. His shot goes right in. And he goes, "We got to fix this right now." Like one of those great moments when a reporter points out something that the coach doesn't even notice.
That is awesome. The rims are off. I could see Chris Mullen doing that, and you're going to just, "Yes, sir, of course, we'll get right on that."
Well, Mully back then was like, "Oh, you guys noticed that?" Because the players all knew that one room was bad.
Right.
They just never said anything about it.
Oh, that's crazy. We're talking with Jason Cole. He is the editor-in-chief of FanSided. You know him formerly of Yahoo Sports Bleacher Report. 35 years in journalism. Follow him on Twitter at JasonCole62. Jason, want to talk some football? You are here as well.
Yeah, sure. We might as well do that.
Okay. So you have been given unprecedented power with the San Francisco 49ers, and you have an important decision to make, Jason. Do with Nick Bosa available, we're going to assume that. That's part of our hypothetical.
Uh-huh.
He's available. Do you take him because you have a huge need there? Or do you trade out? You've got a bunch of other holes, too. Maybe fill a few for the price of one. What do you do?
Well, how far down am I going? And I mean, there's a lot to that equation because it's a deep year for defensive ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you drop down two, three, four spaces, are you getting a guy who's relatively equal to Nick Bosa, who you feel like can play defensive end? Because I do feel like I need a defensive end, right?
Right.
I need one guy who can stir the drink so that I have some depth. I can make Solomon Thomas a fifth guy in my rotation. I've got Armstead and Buckner on the inside. I got D Ford on the other side, right? And all of a sudden, we got a real pass rush that year, but I got to make sure. Now, I'm of the belief that I'm probably going to stay there because I trust that Nick Bosa is going to be a great player, and I trust that Quinnen Williams is going to be a great player. I think if I drop down, my trust level starts to drop pretty quickly. So I'm more about let's just stay there and let's not get too tricky with this. But what's the offer? And so,
yeah.
You know, is the offer good enough? Then maybe. Am I in range to get somebody who's just about as good? We'll think about it. But I'm inclined in this year to stay and take the closest thing I can find to a sure thing, because I've taken some chances the last couple of years and they have not panned out. And I'm not willing to gamble anymore on that.
Jason Cole's a big-time newsbreaker in the NFL. He's editor-in-chief of FanSided. Follow him on Twitter, at JasonCole62. Jason, it seems to me that Shanahan, well, it doesn't seem to me, he's made it pretty clear that he doesn't feel like having that alpha male receiver is necessarily the golden ticket to the Super Bowl. In fact, while he did have Julio Jones as a damn good receiver in Atlanta, his system, the way he schemes guys, I just don't know that he places a premium on premium wideouts. Am I reading that wrong?
No, you're reading it correctly. They've gotten by without those guys. I think you have to have one eventually. I just don't think that he wants to pay the price for it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when they initially got Garcon, I mean, they were trying to have a guy who could at least be a bell cow, if not, you know, not necessarily a high-end alpha male receiver, but certainly a guy who can be productive over there. You want to have that. That didn't turn out. So they've moved on there. But mm-hmm. you need to have guys who can make catches and are going to especially get open on third down situations and help you out. And so Julio Jones is your preference. I just don't think that the market is quite there yet. And he had opportunity with Antonio Brown. I don't think he wanted to take the headache on. Obviously, the market was there with OBJ. Didn't want to pay that price with that high draft pick. I also understand that. So I'll take it from the perspective of he's waiting for his opportunity, and we'll get by for now.
Jason Cole is the editor-in-chief of FanSided. You can follow him on Twitter at JasonCole62. Jason, how much time do you give a first-rounder or a second-rounder versus a fifth, sixth-rounder? Because Solomon Thomas, it didn't look like a reach at the time. In fact, there were people saying that John Lynch had won his first draft the day after the first day of the draft of his first one ever. Obviously, a little bit jumping the gun there, but you've got Eric Armstead, who is another part of their failed history with top picks as a defensive lineman. Do you get more rope when you're a higher pick? Is that a duh?
Yeah, that's kind of a duh.
So are we ready to say Solomon Thomas, though, is maybe...
Well, I mean, he's been a bust so far, which is sad, especially, you know, that's hard for me to say as a Stanford grad. But, he hasn't shown the consistent explosiveness to take advantage of his athletic ability, right? Now, I would give him a little bit more rope, and I would maybe put him in a rotation situation right now and make him earn his way back into it. But you're probably closer to cutting you know, cutting the cord than keeping it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
And you can't be afraid. And then you go back to that first draft. Now, look, Armstead was not Lynch's guy. So he's not part, Armstead's not part of that history. Don't put that on Lynch and Shanahan. But certainly Solomon Thomas is, and, you know, Reuben Foster was, right?
Right.
So all of a sudden that draft that everybody praised so much at the time comes back to haunt you. And sometimes you just look at it and you go, maybe that draft wasn't that good to begin with. Like, maybe the players weren't as good as we thought.
Right.
So that's part of it. But, you know, McCaffrey was in that draft. It turned out to be pretty darn good. And some of the other guys. So, I, you know, as much as I love John Lynch, that first draft is not looking so hot right now. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm sure you remember it, but I was floored. I was actually listening to, it was our station, as I was on my way to my day job, and I heard it was a national NFL writer, but they actually said John Lynch, hands down, won this draft yesterday. And I'm like, dude, it's been 24 hours. Relax.
Well, I mean, but that's part of what we unfortunately have to do.
Yeah.
Look, he won it on that day, but we ultimately don't know for 3 years how these things turn out. And the other side of it is that overwhelmingly, most people lose at the draft because most of the players aren't as good as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Where you really judge people on the draft is you have to give them a good 3 to 5 years to figure out. You know, now, some guys get less rope and they get fired faster because they screw it up so badly. But if you want to really test whether somebody's a good evaluator, look at them over a 5-year stretch of time.
Right.
Not a 1 or 2 year stretch of time. And that's just out of fairness. And again, where are you picking them in the draft? Often determines when you're picking in the top 10, it's a lot easier than when you're picking in the 20s.
Right.
There's a huge, that's why when people start saying, well, God, you want to trade out of the top 10 to collect, you know, if you can get pick 18 and 25, let me tell you, the odds of those guys making it at 18 and 25 is a whole lot lower than it is in the top 10. And it's shocking how much of a difference there is over time. That's why I keep coming back to the Raiders and the Khalil Mack deal and saying, look, you had a sure thing, a guy who'd proven that he could play. All you had to do was give him money at that point in time. And you traded him for, you know, what is essentially with the number 23rd pick this year and just a flip of picks, was it next year? You know, a first for a second mm-hmm. next year? Like, that's not really a great trade in terms of the odds of getting another guy like him. That's where, like, people miss what I'm trying to say about the Khalil Mack deal.
Right. John Gruden has a number of things to say about the Khalil Mack deal. I swear he's...
And all of it's BS.
He has said the name Khalil Mack way more times now that Khalil Mack's not on the Raiders than he ever did from the time he accepted the job into when they traded Khalil Mack. What the hell is that about?
It's trying to prove that you did the right thing. And look, they did what they did, and you live with the results at this point in time, but it's a bad deal. And I don't care what the people at MIT say. The people at MIT don't understand locker room dynamics, and they don't understand the odds of hitting on a player at that level. Okay, I'm sorry, that is a completely terrible analysis on their part. And I don't care if it says MIT in the front of that. Okay, they don't get how football works. And so you get a guy who's a once in a lifetime product, a guy who has a chance to be a Hall of Fame player, who's played on a path that portends to being a Hall of Famer. You just don't give up those guys. And ever since that, Gruden has tried to justify why they didn't do it. And the bottom line is, it was a mistake. And you just got to live with it, and you hope you pick another player. And if you get some kind of reasonable facsimile at a defensive end then okay, fine. You make it work and see how it goes. But to me, there's a couple of things that you want to do. You want to pay guys who you draft who play well, because that sends a message to your entire locker room. When you're paying premium dollars to guys outside of your organization, that undermines the work you've done yourself to develop your own talent and encourage them that they want to be part of this process. And that is one of the biggest mistakes. And let's just say this, Trent Brown better be an extraordinarily great player. Antonio Brown better be an extraordinarily great player, because there's double pressure. Not only were they brought in with expectation, they were brought in with expectation in the form of dollars. And that's a big expression on the rest of your locker room. So that's where I say it's precarious. I remember, Bill Belichick learned this lesson very, very hard when he brought in Adalius Thomas. And Adalius Thomas failed, and he got rid of Adalius Thomas as fast as he could, because he realized that that guy was sending a bad message to the rest of his locker room.
Another couple questions for Jason Cole about the NFL. He's the editor-in-chief of FanSided. Follow him on Twitter, at JasonCole62. Was bringing in Mayock, was that Gruden conceding? Boy, this is really hard doing both of them.
Well, I mean, to some extent, yeah. But I think that Mayock was a great hire. I mean, look, I've criticized a lot of things that Gruden's done. But let me just say that I think that Mayock was a great hire, because this is a guy who's not afraid to tell John what he thinks. And can sit there and say, look, you don't want to listen to me, I can quit anytime I want and I'll go do TV again. I'll make plenty of money doing TV, so right. I don't need to hear your crap, John. Either you hired me to give you my opinion, I'm going to give you my opinion. And I think, whether Mike has been right or wrong, I mean, everybody's wrong on players, everybody's right on players at some point in time. I think the most important thing is Mike has courage and conviction of his opinion, and that's really important to have as you're running an organization. You have to know what direction you want to go, and you have to carry that out. So I think that was a really wise hire on Gruden's part. Okay. So give him a lot of credit for that move. And it's a perfect pairing in my regard, because the biggest issue you have in terms of the power dynamic of the Raiders at this point is that Gruden basically runs the whole thing, right? And he's the most powerful. He has displaced Mark Davis as the most powerful person in the organization in terms of getting what he wants. That's usually impossible to say. But when you owe a guy $90 million still, he's not easy to pay off, right? It's like you can't just, Mark Davis can't just walk in tomorrow and fire John Gruden and say, here's your $90 million, go away. Like, that's a bitter pill to swallow. So Gruden runs the show. And because of that, he needs to have people who are willing to tell him, look, John, that's not a good idea. There aren't many people who are willing to tell him that right now. Mike Mayock is one of the few people who can do that.
Right. Yeah. And I thought it was a great pickup, too. I mean, that whether I know that John is probably playing possum to a certain degree when he gives the oh shucks and pretends like he knows nothing about advanced metrics or analytics or anything. But yeah, I felt like that was a necessary concession on Gruden's part. Hey, Jason, we've run out of time. I appreciate yours always. You're always so gracious with it. Always give us great content. Thank you, man. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Absolutely. Take care. Thanks.
All right. It's Jason Cole. He is the editor-in-chief of FanSided, formerly Yahoo Sports, Bleacher Report, 35 years in journalism. He is one of the best on the NFL. On Twitter, he is at JasonCole62. We continue on with our The Best of Roracle, or Oracle, or that's right, I forgot to pay off the tease. I told you I was going to tell you when it became Roracle. And then I forgot to even read the text, so I don't know what we got there. All I know is that my next Roracle memory, it wasn't Roracle back then. My next Roracle memory may have been the first time we actually heard Oracle roar. Think about it. It's not a Warrior game, but it is basketball. And that's when it became Roracle. And I was right there roaring with him. I'm Mike Lurban, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
He's not lying. We are back. It's 1:48 and 22 seconds on a Sunday. Giants in action. A's in action. Warriors about to be all about that action, boss. Is Beast Mode going to be there for the final? For the final regular season game at Roracle? Beast Mode's got to be there, doesn't he? Antonio Brown was out there the other night enjoying him a hat trick of second quarter dunks by Kevin Durant.
Big Chaz Brown from now on.
What the hell was that? What did he say? Big Chaz Brown?
That was Big Chaz Brown from now on.
Wow. I like him. He's fun. He's going to be fun to have around. I thought Marshawn would be more fun to have around. Not that he hasn't been... Like, he hasn't been a negative. Well, he was when he got kicked out of that game, defending a guy on the other team. I thought that experiment had failed, and they weren't going to bring him back. And then as soon as Gruden got the job, he was talking like Marshawn was a big part of his plans. I don't know if that was just appeasing the potentially divisive locker room force. You know, just tell the guy what he wants to hear. Fine. But I think he really did plan on having Marshawn a little bit more involved last year than he ended up being. I'm not so sure that he's, I don't know, man. I just see him as, look, he's got bursts still. We saw some burst, but I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. I just don't feel like he's 100% present. And how can I say that? I'm not at practices. The guy doesn't, he wouldn't talk to me if I was at practices. So it could be a completely different dynamic. Everybody swears by the guy, what a great guy he is. I don't know. There just hasn't been a whole lot of there. Just flashes. Flashes. Flashes, flashes, flashes. They were everywhere during my next great Roracle memory. As I said, it was a basketball game. It wasn't a Warriors basketball game. Nor was it college. Joe Spadoni, have you put two and two together and figured out what I might be referencing? You got it? What is it? Talk to me. No, see, he doesn't have it. Just like the ship deck, Sharon. Somebody loves me on the Chilton Autobody text line because, let's see, here it is. Mike Lurban, my new favorite on-air talent. Don't use that word talent. It's disrespectful to Spadoni. It's disrespectful to Daniel. They've got talent, too. Probably even more.
I'm kind of a big deal.
My home smells of rich mahogany and many leather-bound books. Boy, that escalated quickly. I got to get that line down verbatim. I don't know what it was. Do you? That got out of hand, or was it that escalated? Something like that. Brick killed somebody with a trident. Awesome. Great Roracle memory. No. All-star game, Vince Carter. That's all I got to tell you. Dunk contest, Vince Carter. More than all-star game. Of course, he played in the all-star game, but that wasn't the show. The show was Saturday. By the way, did you know that Rick Welts, Uber executive for the Warriors, back when he was just a puppy working in the NBA offices. Did you know that, like, what we now know as All-Star Saturday, that was kind of his brainchild? That was the first pelt on the wall that made everybody go, wow, this Welts guy, he's onto something. And now he's in the Hall of Fame. That's crazy. That's awesome, by the way. But yeah, it was his idea to, they were struggling with all sorts of problems, actually, when this came about. It was right before, I think, I don't know, Magic and Bird were, let's see. Yeah, it was after that. So there's been a number of iterations of All-Star Saturday. We have seen, I think right now they have the three-pointer, the dunk contest, and the skills challenge. I don't know how you guys all feel about that. The skills challenge, it sounds a lot cooler than it is. When the concept was first explained to me, I'm like, I'm in. I'll check it out. In particular, because at the time that they started it, it was when we first started seeing and hearing about stretch fours and stretch fives and positionless basketball. So you got to see a guy like, well, nowadays it would be Giannis, the Greek freak. You could put him in a skills contest and he wouldn't embarrass himself. Back in the day, you put a seven-footer in the skills contest, unless it's not your Vetus, not my Vetus, our Vetus Sabonis. If it's not going to be our Vetus, he's going to struggle if he's taller than, I don't know, 6'8", 6'9". Now everybody's 6'8", 6'9", even the centers. Draymond gets lauded like crazy because he can guard opposing centers. But back in the day, you didn't want to see the big fellas handle the rock. Again, I think the skills contest is okay. It's fine. I love NBA All-Star Week. I do. I like everything about it. But I understand the critiques that some people lay at the feet of the people that are running that whole show. That's why it's always tweaking. They're always making changes, whether it's to the dunk contest format, three-point shooters. I actually agree with this one. At one point, they were entertaining the idea of you can't be in the dunk contest or the three-point contest or the skills challenge unless you're an actual all-star or you're playing in that rookie sophomores game. You've got to be there for a reason. You have to have earned your way there for us to let you play in the big sandbox. Okay, this is for the big boys. Think about how much that would energize the dunk contest. Because, look, these guys are unbelievable dunkers. But be honest, most of us don't know who these guys are going into it. And when it's over, unless that guy ends up being a stud rotation player for a high-profile team, it's the last time you'll hear of him. At the same time, though, what does the NBA do better than any other professional league? They market their stars, right? Baseball does a terrible job of that, to the point where their commissioner, Rob Manfred, is saying Mike Trout doesn't do enough to promote Mike Trout. Yeah, he does. He hits homers, makes catches, throws people out, steals bags. That's his job. Your job is to market him. Not everybody is a marketer's dream that will just, here, what do you need? Pablo Sandoval, can you imagine? He'll do anything you want him to do. I played with a guy in junior college. Kenyatta College in Redwood City. You remember Manny Mota? I think he still owns the record. Pinch hitter extraordinaire for the Dodgers.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.